Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back with you here to close out the week on the 9th of April, 2021, here on The Punch Out from Breakthrough News. We got a great show for you as we always do. We're going to be talking here about the upcoming elections happening in Ecuador this Sunday. We're also going to be talking a little bit about St. Vincent's and the Grenadines. There's a large volcanic eruption in St. Vincent today. Some hardship ahead. We're going to talk about that, but a little bit more about the island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, some things that are worth knowing beyond just the natural disaster. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we're going to start with the end of week two of the Derek Chauvin trial. We've reached day 10, the trial of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd, the end of week two, essentially. There's a lot to be said about the trial, and I'm just going to mention here at the outset, you can go back and check out our episode of The Freedom Side live last night from Breakthrough News, where we talked all about this for, you know, about an hour. So there's much more to be said. But just to make a few points here, just in general, at the end of this week, where we stand, more or less the past couple days have been, from an evidentiary point of view, really perhaps the crucial point in the trial, as the prosecution is aimed to discredit the key aspect of the defense case. And that is something other than Derek Chauvin's knee on his neck killed George Floyd, mainly drug use. The defense argument has been that Chauvin's brutality would not have been fatal if not for Floyd having used fentanyl and other drugs. So yesterday and today, there's been a long list of experts brought forward by the prosecution, including, by the way, the forensic pathologist who trained the person who did the autopsy, which the defense is arguing vindicates its theory, to rebut this defense argument. The experts testified about much more than we can summarize here, but made a few things very clear, and that are the few of them being that George Floyd's actions, while having Chauvin's knee on his neck, did not conform to any sort of drug-induced death, that they did conform to someone dying from being choked to death, and that the exact position of the knee, even if partially on Floyd's shoulder, which the defense has argued, would not have changed the effect of Chauvin's body weight on the respiratory system the way he was pressing him down there. In other words, they confirmed 100% what we all saw in that video, that Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd. The previous elements of testimony up to now, some of which you've probably already seen, have addressed more or less the secondary thrust of the defense argument that Chauvin feared for his own life from the bystanders and that his actions conform to appropriate police procedures in that circumstance. And in that second instance, it really has become one of the most remarked upon parts of the trial. It's the parade of police officers taking the stand to denounce Chauvin's actions. Now, on the one hand, it does help the case that Chauvin is guilty, and without a doubt, it is totally outrageous, as they're saying it is, and it should not be done. But that being said, since 2015, the Minneapolis police have used neck restraints at least 237 times, 16% of the time rendering someone unconscious. Chauvin himself has been documented as using the procedure before. So again, all the testimony is right in terms of the behavior itself being egregious, but it isn't an outlier. It isn't that just he's some rogue cop. In fact, Chauvin and the broader culture he was a part of are deeply brutal. The defense argument is just obviously disgusting. It's based on the extreme defamation of George Floyd, the bystanders to his murder, and the absurd contortions over freeze frames of the video of Mr. Floyd's murder. But I have to say, it's bound to get worse once the defense puts on their own case, and that's coming relatively soon here, and they'll be putting on their own experts to support what they are saying, and that means that there's going to be even more in terms of this demonization of George Floyd and other individuals. And, you know, the issue, of course, is that it has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Chauvin is facing second and third degree murder charges. In Minnesota, that means, essentially, did Chauvin kill Floyd intentionally, even if he didn't plan to do it ahead of time? And or did he essentially just not care if he killed him while knowing he could, that his actions could? So the defense wants to sow every seed of doubt, of course, that what's clear when you see it isn't so clear. And as I said before, it means it'll be even more of turning George Floyd and the crowd of bystanders into horrendous monsters and Chauvin into an embattled cop just doing the best he could to keep the peace. It's gross. It's disgusting. It's obviously false when you look at the video. But again, it will get worse as the trial moves on. So as I said at the beginning, for a fuller take on all of this, check out last night's Freedom Side Live, where we talked about all of these, this and much, much more with all of our guests. But more or less, that is where the trial stands as of now and a bit of where it's going into the next couple of weeks. A volcano has erupted in the Caribbean island of St. Vincent, or the Caribbean nation, I should say, of St. Vincent and the Grenadines on the main island of St. Vincent. And 16,000 people live in the so-called red zone where they were needed to evacuate for sure. And an evacuation started a few days ago after there was increased seismic activity. 20,000 overall, however, have fled so far. Some neighboring island nations offering to take some refugees. There's a cruise ship that's being set up as well to take some people. Venezuela has sent humanitarian supplies and teams of experts to help with evacuation and relocation efforts. It's a small country. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, 110,000, could be seriously affected by ashfall and lava flows so that even if, as looks likely, most casualties can be avoided, there certainly can be months ahead with serious humanitarian challenges. You think about temporary housing, all those things that you'll have to do. But of course, most people are not talking about St. Vincent of the Grenadines. It's mainly known here in the United States for its vacation spot, but it also deserves to be a little bit more known for its geopolitical position. I mean, the help from Venezuela isn't accidental. In fact, St. Vincent and the Grenadines is really a representative country when we talk about the broader swing to the left of many governments in Latin America and the Caribbean pushing back on years of brutal neoliberalism that enriched elites and impoverished the majority of these countries. Since 2001, the country has been led by the Unity Labor Party and Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves. They're firm members of the Venezuela-Cuba inspired ALBA alliance of countries in the Caribbean and South America and have firmly embraced a similar agenda, all these countries really have, but St. Vincent's as well, of developing the nation more for its people and not simply for the wealthy elites. The ULP has built roads and schools. In fact, more roads and bridges than any other government in the past. They built a number of schools, hospitals, low-income housing. They're working to eliminate hunger as well. They also provided universal access to water and electricity to the island for the first time ever, continuing to expand the airport to help expand the economy as well so people can gain more income. Any number of things, also expanding fuel storage. And so there's more access to things that help make life run on a daily basis. And all of the things that are being created in terms of wealth are being shared out much more equitably. And of course, this has also included partnerships with countries like Venezuela and Cuba with issues like COVID-19, where they were able to gain access to medical care many other small countries have not been able to get access to because of the alliances they have forged. And they're a strong proponent of regional integration in the Caribbean and Latin America more broadly to enhance these kind of development agendas. St. Vincent's and the Grenadines has also been outspoken against U.S. sanctions against Venezuela, the blockade against Cuba, and generally is a voice for progressive issues all around the region. And this past November, the ULP was brought back to power in elections for the fifth consecutive time. In face of tough challenges, for sure, the next few days will reveal a lot, and many more people will be looking at St. Vincent's than probably ever before. But I list all the above to say that St. Vincent deserves to be seen just as much for its actual political policies of uplifting its people as for the terrible results of a natural disaster or its popularity as a tourism destination. The second round of Ecuador's presidential elections will take place this Sunday. All indications seem to be that Andres Arau and his Union of Hope party will win by a fairly wide margin. Arau, who won 32% of the vote in the first round, is polling at just over 50%. and has been for over several weeks. Ecuador's election is a bellwether for the region, as Arauz's victory would be a big swing back to the left in Ecuador after the last president, the outgoing president, Lenin Moreno, departed sharply from the direction of the country, really for most of the past couple decades. From 2007 to 2017, the country was governed by the Citizens Movement, and Arauz's party, the Union of Hope, is an outgrowth of that movement and those governments. Over that time, 2007 to 2017, poverty was reduced, education and healthcare were expanded. Moreno just junked this legacy, returned to an IMF-dominated policy that has increased social inequality. And in addition, he's presided over a disastrous handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Arauz is confronted in this election by Guillermo Lasso, a right-wing businessman who promises really even more of the market-oriented reforms that Moreno has been working with. A set of policies that could not even garner Lasso 20% of the vote in the first round of the election to give you a sense of their popularity. Lasso has even been denied entry into whole towns and working-class areas, such as the level of disdain among those classes for his politics. Recent days have seen Arauz gain endorsements from significant movements and leaders among these same popular classes. The National Confederation of Peasant, Indigenous, and Black Organizations held an assembly to endorse Arauz. And amidst some controversy, the leader of the nation's largest peasant organization, CONAI, the president of that organization, one of the most powerful political forces in the country, endorsed Arauz. However, some sectors of that organization, CONAI, are supporting spoiled ballots over supporting either candidate. So that was the source of the controversy. But nevertheless, the president of the largest indigenous organization endorsed Arauz. There are fears Moreno may try to manipulate the election using strict lockdown measures he implemented to address COVID, or allegedly to address COVID, at the beginning of this month. And certainly an attempt at fraud to help Lasso is certainly not out of the question either. But all indications seem to show that Ecuador will be yet another example of the rejection of pro-business versus pro-people policies that is rising once again in countries all across the Americas. That's the punch out for today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York, East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles, Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.